And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee. At Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long. And all postseason long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic. And I am joined, once again, by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of postseason baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Doug, how are you, my friend? Feeling pretty fresh and well-rested, are you?
Well, I guess if you say I slept 3 days ago, that's fine. I guess if we can stockpile sleep, then that's a good thing. So I'm just going off sleep from 3 days ago. And
Right.
Just that's it. I'm hoping that that's enough to not have me fall asleep in the kitchen.
In the kitchen. I don't want you to fall asleep in the podcast. I think I mentioned before my fun little nickname for October, National Sleep Deprivation Month. And just to be clear, I love everything about it, but I am rocking some serious sleep deprivation right now. I will talk more about it in our Strange But True segment, but all I can say is as much as I love beautiful San Diego, California, I'm just not that down about not climbing on a plane to San Diego Monday morning. Doug, can you relate?
Ooh, like, you know, we had a 7:45. There was a nonstop Philly to San Diego. And with the rain, I was like, I don't think this is happening. So we were kind of wondering. And then, and of course, the Phillies won. But even if they didn't win, it would be tight. The next one was going to be 5:30 in the morning through Dallas, getting into San Diego at 10. And then, you know, you have a couple hours and you could get to the field. So, I mean, that would have been the life. But it's like something about going back east, west, and then east, and then west. I mean, it just sort of like, the sleep, you know, because I started in Cleveland. Well, I realized in Atlanta, then Cleveland, then I don't even know where I was. But that's what I, so yeah.
Where were you? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Time zones, this doesn't even matter. So, but yeah, it was getting a little dicey. But we wouldn't want it out of the way, any other way. We were just, having fun. What a scene in Philadelphia. Wow.
Yeah, you don't even want to know about my travel. We'll do it some other time. I'd like to thank American Airlines for an enjoyable day of travel last week. Anyway, some stuff happened since we were here last. For one thing, Doug and I were actually together in the same place. And by that, I mean a place not named Starkville. That has not happened much. So that was cool. Posted a photo about it. Doug did. So look for that. Also, in other news, we had two incredible league championship series where the Astros swept the Yankees. And I've got written down that the Phillies beat the Padres. But can that be right? Wait, the Phillies are in the World Series? In a few minutes, we'll talk to the two fantastic play-by-play voices of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy and Scott Fransky. I remember they were here a few weeks ago. Now they're back. It's kind of a before-after thing, and some stuff has changed over those last few weeks. So Doug, why don't we talk about these two LCSs? I don't know if that's a word, whatever. We might as well start with the one that we both covered, Phillies over Padres in the NLCS. I'm pretty sure that really happened. What are you going to remember about that series, Doug?
Well, I mean, it was a little surprising that those were the two teams that ended up in the LCS. I mean, I know baseball happens, of course. But, I mean, I just, you know, I'd seen both of these teams quite a bit this year. And especially saw San Diego early against Seattle. And San Diego was in search of, you know, they were interesting. They never won more than five in a row. They never lost more than five in a row. They never were under 500 after April, like, 7th. So they were a good team, but they were always like, oh, they're good, but they're not, like, great. You know, they weren't. It wasn't that they couldn't be. They had the money, investments, and but Tatis Jr., that was a disaster. I think it really hurt in a lot of ways, you know, just the team. And Bob Melvin did a good job of figuring out, like, bringing them together around it. Ha-Sung Kim came in and did a nice job. Really fantastic shortstop, by the way. So, yeah. So you're watching them, but there was always this, like, man, the bottom of the order is not hitting. You know, everything's on Machado. It was just sort of, and then the big trade, but even then it didn't like take off right away. It was still, Soto didn't play as Soto level-ish. And so, I don't know, they were kind of a mystery. I knew they had good starting pitching and they had Josh Hader who was struggling. There was just like, how is this team going to go anywhere? And then, you know, they beat the Mets and then they beat the Dodgers. So we're like, and I was at the Dodgers series, like, wait a minute. But they kind of were a step ahead. And then the Phillies were just, they were really floundering. We did the Mets series before Joe Girardi was let go. And I talked to Dave Dombrowski and he was like, you know, I don't know. You know, I mean, he was always confident, like, we're a good team. But he just is like, they weren't where they wanted to be, obviously. And just that one move just changed everything. So sure, they have a team that's, you know, lives on the home run, a couple good starters and all that. But when you look at the Dodgers and the Mets and all these 100-win teams, you're just, how are they going to get through these teams? Well, the answer turned out to be, don't play them. But watching them with Rob Thomson, just a really in-tune manager, really stable, steady guy. I think when you kind of put it together, you realize that, sure, if you get hot at the right time and your players play up to expectations and they have the fourth and fifth highest payroll in baseball, they should be good. And they turned out that they were.
Yeah. You know, Doug, the Phillies are dangerous. I know that they won the fewest games of any of these teams in the postseason. And they wouldn't even be playing if there wasn't an extra wild card this year. But they really are built for these short series. And that came out. They've talked about it all year long, talked about it on the field after the game, how even though he was saying at the deadline, they weren't that kind of team where they were one big move away from being a World Series team. When he said that, he didn't mean they couldn't win. He always thought they had hitters that would hit good pitching and that they had big-time starters and they had better arms in their bullpen than people realized. And again, all of that came out. Did it ever come out? But Doug, I just wanted to talk for a minute about Sunday, game five of the NLCS. We'll get into the Bryce Harper homer with Scott and Todd McCarthy, because the Scott Fransky call was one that will stick in Philadelphia's head for a long time. But there was something about that game that was just so Philadelphia. And we know it because we've both spent so much time in our lives experiencing Philadelphia and what makes Philadelphians tick. And that game Sunday, NLCS Game 5, had such a 2008 World Series Game 5 vibe going for a while there. And it was funny, I ran into Jason Worth throughout the first pitch after the game. We started talking about it. And I went back and took a look. So that 2008 World Series Game 5, Phillies are a game away from clinching the World Series. They take an early 2-0 lead, just like Sunday. They have their ace on the mound, just like Sunday, except then it was Cole Hamels. This time it's Zach Wheeler. And then sure you noticed this, it starts to rain. And we got the puddles in the infield thing going on again. We've got the lead disappearing thing going on again. And, I mean, Jason Wirth and I both felt it, but wasn't there this whole Philadelphia dread syndrome going on out there? It was so tangible. You could taste it. It was like you could hear these people thinking, oh no, we're about to win this thing. And then the weather gods don't want us to win. They're going to make sure we don't win. Couldn't you feel that?
Yeah. Well, no, there's no doubt that, you know, I mean, that's what I love about baseball too. The culture of your team kind of starts to reflect the city, right? The fans. And yes, there's a lot of dread in Philly about bad things happening, and they're going to call it out and make sure that you know, held accountable. But you know, they did prevail in 08. And I think that the weather, I was wondering, like, okay, when are they going to put this, like, you know, whatever it was, diamond dry or whatever, cat litter on the field? Are they going to leave it wet when the Padres were on? You know, I was just wondering, like, how it was going to go down. But they kept coming out there and fixing it up. But it built the theater. It did. It just built the theater of like, oh my goodness, the guys, nobody was standing on the infield dirt because they were clearing it off and raking
right.
it. And
it's so true.
So they're all talking and having like these short catches between Machado and and Drury. So you could feel it because the patience it requires to kind of go through baseball when you have that edge to you and the ominous feeling of like this could go badly. But they were in the driver's seat. They were still up 3-1 and they were home and they still had that last at bat. So you kind of felt like that was, you know, a huge advantage for them to just, you know, have to have the patience for it. So yeah, the fans were standing up from pitch one through the whole game. I mean, loud as could be. I mean, I had to put my headphones on mostly just so I can hear myself, you know. It was unbelievable how loud it was in there. So, but yeah, they rose to the occasion, and part of it, I think of Philadelphia as a boxing match. You know, it's like Muhammad Ali, like, you know, their games, it's like boxing. You know, you go back, you punch, you counterpunch, and they like that. They like the sparring of it. And that game was exactly that at the, you know, at one of the great boxing rings. I forgot the one in Philadelphia, like where, you know, all
the Blue Horizon.
Blue Horizon, right, exactly.
I don't know.
Right. yeah, so that's what it was. It was just a great boxing match. And of course, Bryce Harper threw the final blow.
Yeah. You know, the difference between this game in 2008 was the dread in 2008 lasted for 2 days because they stopped the game, didn't resume it for 2 days. And people spent two days walking around thinking, oh no, this is the most Philadelphia thing ever. So in the game Sunday, it only lasted for an inning and a half because then Bryce Harper happened. But I wanted to bring it up just because I didn't get a chance to write about it. And it was just this little Philadelphia slice of life that I've been thinking about. I'm sure I'll be thinking about it all week. Family was talking about it after the game. It's just such a Philadelphia thing. Okay, let's talk about the Astros because that team is something, man. 7-0 in this postseason against the Yankees and Mariners. They're just the third team in the wild card era to get to the World Series without losing a game. It's interesting to look at those two teams. 2007 Rockies did that. Then they got swept by the Red Sox. The 2014 Royals did that. That was the World Series they lost to the Madison Bumgarners. So neither of those teams won the World Series. But, of course, it wasn't a situation where both of them were going to have the layoff for 5 days. Only the team that did the sweeping had the layoff came into play. And the other thing is, Doug, just the Astros, this feels less fluky, way less fluky than those two teams, the Rockies and Royals. So the Astros have just felt like, to me, that not only the best team, but also the most October-ready team. What about you? How do you see them from afar and you've seen them up close?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really good team. Like, there's nothing overrated about the Houston Astros. I mean, they've been steadily good, you know, just consistent. And, wow, their pitching is special. I mean, because there's weapons, inside weapons, right? They have the starters, they have, you know, the Verlanders of the world, but they also have all these guys that can bridge and take on this middle roles. They can close games. So there's not a lot of holes in those in their pitching side. And then you look at whether it's Jordan Alvarez and Peña, young guys, just having that direct impact. I mean, so everywhere you look, this is a team that does so many things well. So you think, yeah, the Dodgers were kind of that in the National League, did a lot of things well, played defense, they pitched. But, you know, I think the Astros have weathered different, obviously, results and outcomes. They found a way to put it all together, not only being dominant during the season and built for 162, as you would talk about, but they were also built for the playoffs. You know, they're kind of that rare combination where they can hit the ball in the ballpark, they can play defense, they can pitch, they close games. And so they win 162 convincingly, but they also know how to win the short series. I think that's what makes them dangerous. And you know, look, Dusty is ready. You know, Dusty Baker's been waiting for this, and it's incredible. He's back at the World Series again, and he took over the most controversial team in the last 100 years. Says a lot. That says a lot about his capability. And now I think he's just trying to now marry the people skills and the humanitarian and the wide-ranging respect to being like, I'm also a champion at the highest level. That's what's missing. And I think that's a X factor of motivation for, you heard a lot of the players in the post game yesterday, Bregman, like doing it for Dusty. It really matters, because I think a lot of those players that were there in the biggest controversy, Altuve, they appreciate Dusty Baker because he is about forgiveness. He's about, you know, kind of higher order, you know, faith and belief and not really being someone's judge, but like, kind of finding a way to reconcile. He's just, they needed that. That's the only way that Astros could have ever moved forward, with someone who actually understood like the humility that needs to come from their choices, and also how to move forward and quite frankly, embrace the villain a little bit. He's also great at that. So to me, that's the X factor. The Phillies have a great X factor, because when you watch that series, you're like, oh, this team is destined, right? They just felt like that with Bryce Harper. But then they're going up against a team that I'm sure Dusty Baker feels the same way. It's like when I was with the Cubs playing the Marlins, you felt destined because of the Cubs' years of futility. But then you looked at the Marlins and like, oh, that's a really good team too. So that's why it's going to be a great series. And I don't know, I'm looking forward to it. And I was an 80s Phillies fan, so I remember Astros Phillies in 80. And back then my Phillies came out on top. And that was my childhood World Series title in 1980, so I'll always remember that.
We'll be talking about that series. We'll be talking about Dusty a week. And we'll be talking about just how good the Astros are, because the Yankees, they just never had an answer for what the Astros do best. Yankees couldn't shut down their offense. The Yankees couldn't score enough against the deepest pitching staff in baseball. And yet, you know, it's obvious to us, the Yankees were not the better team. The Astros pulverized them all year long. Until last night, I think that all the games that those two teams played in the regular season and the postseason, the Astros never threw a pitch while trailing until yesterday. That's crazy. It was game five, whatever. But why do I think that New Yorkers won't see that side of this? They won't say, well, that other team was just better. Nobody in New York will remember those 99 games that team won. They'll only remember that this makes 13 years in a row without a trip to the World Series, and they're the New York Yankees. So am I reading that right? Is that how New York's going to handle this, Doug?
Yep, that's how it is. And I grew up in the area, and They had a lot of years with Dave Winfield. They didn't make the playoffs, but you know, I think what's tough about this stretch is they've made the playoff a lot. That's the difference, right? It's like they've made the playoffs. They just haven't gotten anywhere, at least to the World Series. I think that's sometimes painful as much as it is like the 10-year droughts they've had in the distant past. So they're close but no cigar kind of thing, and that's that's really hard for Yankee fans for sure, because it's like one move, one this, if we just had, you know, it's just that. And that's Aaron Boone's got a tough job. He's got a tough job.
I hope he has a job. Yeah. We'll find out. But now it's the Phillies' turn. I actually think this will be a really fun World Series. So you know what we should do? We should talk about the Phillies with two guys who know everything there is to know about them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Doug, time to welcome in our two very special guest star visitors to Starkville. It is the voices of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy of NBC Sports Philly, and Scott Fransky, the voice of the Phillies on the radio. And, you know, you guys look kind of familiar. It's almost as if you've been here before. Oh, wait.
I think we passed through Starkville once. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? That was 4 weeks ago.
I thought it would be our one and only visit.
Right. So let's think about this. Has anything changed since we saw you last?
Well, I still haven't mowed my lawn since then.
My pants don't fit anymore. Road trip food.
Now the Starkville police, we didn't arrest them, did we? They are here on free will, right?
I don't recall any arrests or subpoenas, anything like that. You know what I recall? I had this crazy dream that the Phillies are in the World Series.
Amazing.
Could that be right?
It's amazing.
Unbelievable, right?
It is amazing. It is amazing.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's been amazing at Citizens Bank Park. And isn't it something just to look back in time? Not even that far back in time. 4 weeks when you guys were here. 3 weeks. 2.5 weeks. And think about how everything that you thought you knew turned out to be so off base. Wouldn't be the first time for me, right? For you guys. So the Phillies are going to the World Series to play the Astros, just as we all expected. I know we can see now how this could have happened, but how do you think it actually happened? Tom, let's start with you.
You know, Rob Thompson talked about them getting into the postseason, the stress that the team felt. And I mean, I think we all felt it. You know, we were watching them lose that first game of the day-night doubleheader in Houston, and we're thinking, after losing 3 to Chicago at Wrigley, we're thinking, this ain't going to go well. But he said that once they got in, he said, just relaxed them a little bit. Maybe. I also think that the matchups were somewhat fortuitous. I mean, the Cardinal matchup, I felt they were better than the Cardinals going into that series, even though the games were in St. Louis. That helped them. The Padres knocked off the Mets. That obviously helped, too. Padres knocked off the Dodgers. That helped, too. I mean, things really fell in line, but they definitely are playing, I think, more relaxed. I think that's part of it. And I think that their big guy is playing like their big guy, and he wasn't at the end of the year. I mean, that's been, I think, a huge part of this whole thing.
I noticed.
Yeah, I can promise you it's not false bravado or anything from Rob Thompson. He nope. told me that specifically in his office in that last week of the season. And he said, if we can just get in, I think these guys are going to be all right. And, you know, he has said it a number of times publicly since, but he really did believe that going into it, that the thing was getting in. It was putting away the 11 years of you know, and even the last, in particular, the last 4 years of missed opportunities when every September they went into the month with a chance to make the playoffs. And yeah, the big guy has been the big guy. There's no doubt about it. But they have played in the playoffs like they were designed to play.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
You know, this is the team they built. It was a team. It's a team that has shown its defensive flaws in the postseason. It is a team that has ridden two really good starters in the postseason, and it's a team that has ridden two or three really good relievers. And they've kind of filled in some of the gaps. Have they gotten some breaks? Perhaps. You know, the Cardinals matchup, maybe that's a really good first round matchup for them. I mean, if they're the fifth seed and they face the Mets in the first round, I don't know. Who knows? Would they be here? I don't know. There's no way to go back and do it differently. But they're playing like they were designed to play.
Yeah, you know, you guys actually have missed the key thing here. It's not that they didn't have to play the Dodgers or the Mets. It's that they didn't have to play the Cubs.
Or the Rangers.
I know, right? We joke, you know, it's funny. We were looking at this yesterday. This is the team they were built to be. That's what you just said, right? If I'm not mistaken, this team has played together more games in the postseason than the actual season. Am I right? I'm almost sure that's right. Think about it.
That may be right.
That's your department, Jason.
totally your wild and wacky.
Yeah, we're just here to pluck it off your tree.
I'll get back to you. I was too tired to look it up. Doug, what have you seen? You were there for the whole ride.
Yeah. Man, it was truly amazing. But I think it started the tone that Rob Thompson set. And I think that, you know, I remember Zach Wheeler, you know, doing the interviews, the presser before they started the series in San Diego. And Wheeler focused a lot on Bryce Harper and saying he's the man. So then when the man came in Harper, he said, you know, Rob Thompson is our oak, right? He referenced Tombstone and Wyatt Earp and all, but he said he's our oak. And you know, we definitely asked Rob about that, but there is something to say about his experience, his calm. But he's not that experienced calm guy that's like rolling his eyes at young players. He really embraces them as, you know, part of the team and their how they inspire players, you know, with their energy and their hope and their optimism and their just enthusiasm of being
and
there. And their wackiness, right? And you know, Marsh coming over and, you know, all the hair stuff and his great defense. I think it sort of fit pretty well. And you have to have a good manager that knows how to not only develop players in a way, even at the major league level, to prepare them for this moment, but they also have to know how to kind of integrate players, right? How do you bring in guys that are traded and young guys coming up and all the moves that they had to make? But I thought Scott's, you know, made a great point about that they were built for this, and they truly were. And the thing I would add to what Scott listed is home runs. Yeah. The home run is king in the postseason. And, you know, even the 1-0 game, we did two games in Cleveland, 2-1 and 1-0. And it was all home runs. So, and then the 10-6 game in the Padres Phillies game was another example of, you know, Reese Hoskins show, right? So, I think it was, you know, a lot to see how they came together and really played the game that leads to a lot of success in the postseason. And you know, when you have a star like Harper who, you know, rose to the occasion of all the big hits, and you have frontline starters for two games at least, and Suarez is tough too, you know, they look great. And, you know, the Padres just seemed like they were one move late on things, and Thompson always felt like a move early, because you could tell that Bob Melvin was trying to get his pitchers through something because he was worried about extending the bullpen. He knew he felt good about Suarez and Hader, but he, you know, and maybe Garcia, but it was like that fifth, sixth inning. So it was like, get far. And he would go that one extra batter, and it might have been Bryson Stott who hit the double, or Max Muncy hit the home run, and so on. But it was really interesting to see those different managerial styles, and Thompson was just, you know, really amazing.
I do want to spend some time like just digesting more about how we got here. But first, I need to hear something. It's one of the all-time iconic postseason home runs, certainly in the history of the Phillies, but actually documented this in my column Sunday night, in all of postseason history. I want to hear Scott Fransky calling Bryce Harper's home run on Sunday afternoon.
Two balls, two strikes to Bryce Harper. Suarez delivers. Swing and a drive. Left field. It's deep. It's going. Yes! And it is gone.
Yes. Yes!
It is bedlam at the bank as Bryce Harper has put the Phillies on top.
Are you kidding me? Oh,
his 10th career home run in the postseason. And he may never hit a bigger one.
It is bedlam at the bank.
Oh, man, that's a T-shirt. That's a T-shirt. That it's a mug. It's a hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got it. You need to make those all up and give them to everyone you know, Scott.
Great.
Hey, listen, just tell me about that call.
I don't know. I mean, it's just it's say what you see, right? You try not to come completely unhinged. I'm not sure I did that, but I don't know. For me, it's just I'm really fortunate to get to be a part of something like that, and really fortunate to. I mean, I've seen some really cool things, and I love this game, and I love this team, and I love this franchise, and for me to be connected to that, that's, you know, that's really, really cool.
Really cool. And you know, Doug and I talk about this a lot now that he's also on these calls for ESPN Radio, and it's about how it isn't just the home run that becomes the memory. It's the call of the home run. How much do you think about that, that these words that come out of your mouth are going to resonate through the ages?
Well, you know, I don't know. The one I've always gotten asked about more than any other was Jimmy Rollins hitting the double against Broxton in the 09 LCS. And people always say to me, well, what a great call. I'm like, well, Jimmy did all the hard work. You know, and it's the same thing with yesterday with Bryce. I mean, he pulled off the real magic, and you know, these things are singular moments, right? And if you're there in the ballpark and you watch it, you saw it a certain way, and you might remember it that way. But for a lot of us who, you know, there's only 45,000 seats, and so there's a lot of people that had to experience it a different way. And so, and I think we all want to experience it over again. Like, he's never going to hit that home run for the first time again. It's a one shot deal. So I think people, you know, maybe latch on to the call or, you know, or replay, you know, some video angle replay. I mean, I know they've had a bunch of those. And I think we all just want to relive it again and again. So, I guess in some ways we're the beneficiary of that because, you know, yeah, people will, I'm sure people will tell me, you know, years from now, because they do about J-Roll, and I'm sure they'll do it about this.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll tell you the coolest thing that I dug up. There have been five other home runs in postseason history that put a team into the lead that late in the game when they were trailing. But there had never been one hit the inning after that team blew the lead that was going to clinch the series, right? This was in only clinching games. So there'd never been that homer.
Wow.
Isn't it incredible to think about?
That is incredible. I mean, in the history of this game and considering all the home runs, was yesterday the anniversary of the Joe Carter one too? I mean, was that the same day that Carter hit the home run to win the World Series in 93?
I think you're right. Whoa. Well, and that was on the list.
That was on the list. Yeah, that was on the list. You know, it's remarkable some of the times where we pull out. I mean, Scott and I have been talking on the radio in different points where, you know, Harper is this, Hoskins is this, and you're bringing out, you know, Sarge and Mike Schmidt and Jimmy Rollins and Jason Worth. I mean, that's also, I think, really cool, is that we're giving everybody a history lesson of the Philadelphia Phillies postseason in this postseason, because it's been this special. I mean, it's just, that's awesome.
Yeah, so true. And Tom, I got to ask you about this. We think about it every October. It just stinks that the home team's TV announcers don't get to do this time of year.
Well,
we all understand why it is, but you can admit it. You're jealous of your friend Fransky right now.
I'm jealous of Scott, of Joe Davis, of Oscar, and Bill Kulik on Spanish. And it's what we signed up for, and I'm grateful that I get to do two innings of radio. I mean, beyond grateful that I get to do two innings of radio. I mean, it's just amazing to be part of it. I love the fact that I get to do pregame stuff. I mean, postgame stuff too, being on the field yesterday. But you know, it is, I'll admit it, I was envious of Scott's call, which was wonderful. Joe Davis's call was fantastic. I wanted to be part of the mechanism that was on the TV, because those guys did an amazing job of capturing the crowd too, in their way. I mean, you know, Pete Macheska, the producer, I mean, those guys, they were really good. So yeah, I am envious, but appreciative also that I get to be part of it. Just to be part of it. I mean, I always tell people that when it comes to the postseason, I'll do whatever I can to help. I'll do whatever I can to help. And that's the Hoskins home run, you know, the place just is unbelievable to watch when things like that happen. I mean, just all of it. And the same with the Harper one. Scott's right. There's all these different angles. It's so cool to watch them. So yeah, I am beyond envious. Beyond envious.
I'm beyond grateful that, I don't know if our shop is any different than most, but we have such a good crew and we are all such good friends that for us, I know this is a really cool thing to experience with our best friends.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Larry or Tom or Greg Murphy, who does our pre and post, the engineers who work in the booth with us, you know, we're our own little family for 6 months out of the year, and just, we're having the best time. It's awesome. It's great to be a part of.
And I think about it too, with Scott's home run, I could picture Larry bouncing in his seat, like laughing.
Going, is that what he was doing?
Yes. Yeah, well, that's what he does. And then he looks down, he marks it. Like, I envision it all. And he's marking his book because his book has to be perfect. I mean, it's just funny. It's just fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you know, guys, we all have like a Philly history. I mean, I grew up a Phillies fan, and I learned about Jason's columns when I was in college in Philadelphia. And so it's a long history, and I think certainly I'd never been on the field for them clinching, but talking to Bryce Harper before the game, you know, he was kicked back with his suit and sneakers, and he was laying back in his chair, and I knew about how he has a lot of respect for legacy and how he has figured out a way to connect that, and maybe, you know, a lot of people may not know like how deep he is involved in that. And I know when I learned it for the first time, it was years ago when he was with the Nats, Dusty Baker was sharing this. And it was so fascinating to think of a 19-year-old who had an edge to him, became this real, you know, ambassador in a lot of ways. So I'm curious about your experience, you know, seeing Harper kind of for the first time on that stage, but also as he's, you know, become part of this Philly culture, who you see him as now versus what you kind of perceived before he got there?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't really, from a distance, like him, didn't really know him. I had one interaction with him and he was great, but he was on the Nationals. So we didn't like the Nationals. They took Jason Worth from us. So, you know, but I don't know. I've enjoyed having him around. I really have. I enjoy interacting with him. His parents are awesome people too. They raised him right. And, you know, the media guy this year has Bryce on it with the tuxedo and the MVP trophy and stuff like that. And he had a pretty good hand in that because he knew that Mike Schmidt had the same cover years ago. And, you know, the people that came up with that idea, he was headlong into it when they came up with it, because he's so appreciative of the history of the game. He came on with us for five or six innings earlier this year. And the stuff he was bringing up, it was, he knows the game. He knows everything about it. So.
Yeah, I think he's, put a lot of effort into to making sure that he's, he doesn't want to, he's not a guy who wants to be caught unawares. You know, he doesn't want to be that guy that somebody says, you know, some reporter, I don't know, maybe a guy who writes columns with really crazy stats in it, to come up to him and say, hey, you know, you're the first, I'm just, you know, just throwing something out there.
Yeah. This would never happen in actual life.
Yeah. But he, I don't think he wants to have a reporter come up to him and say, hey, you know, you're the first guy since ... to do this for the Phillies. He wants to know who that ... is.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to not know that. And I think he's put effort into making sure that he's aware of those things, and he's aware of the history, and he's aware of the city, and he's aware of the, you know, the people in this town. And I just think, you know, he committed to be here for 13 years. And he committed 100%. I think that's pretty obvious. You know, in you know, that kind of a story you're talking about, Doug, is that matters to him. You know, I think the history of the game matters to him, but I think the history of the Phillies matters a great deal to him.
You know, I wrote a column after that game Sunday asking about all the what ifs, you know, and how the stars line up for this team. And they needed to line up for that home run to mean anything. But I keep thinking about the Bryce Harper what if. What if Bryce had signed somewhere else? Mm. Why do you think the player was such a perfect fit for the town and the team? Tom?
Well, that's a great question. What if he would have signed somewhere else? Because Manny signed, right? Manny signed before him, didn't he, with San Diego?
Yep.
And then
Manny signed. I was in spring training in Arizona. Right. Manny signed the last day I was in Arizona, and then Bryce signed the first day I was in Florida.
Right. So
it worked out well for me, at least.
Yeah. So that to me, like, where do you go from there? I didn't know how he would fit into the city, honestly, until he got here and I met him that first day and talked to him, and kind of understood what his father was. You know, a blue collar guy, even though you don't realize it. But he embraced the whole thing. I saw him interact with the Fanatic the first time. I mean, and like, he knew everything about the Fanatic, like everything about the Fanatic. It was really funny. So, I think he fits perfectly into the city. I think it's because he's embraced what the city is. And the fabric of the city and the energy of the city. And, you know, I just think a lot of guys, when they come in, they're like, what is going on here? this is different. I don't know if I like a roast pork sandwich or not. I mean, I don't know which cheesesteak I like better, but he's like, just jumped into everything. He's jumped into everything about the city.
Yeah, so true. I want to talk about some of these other what-ifs, too. Scott, you're a perfect one to ask this one because you do the Rob Thompson show every night. What if they hadn't changed managers? Does this happen?
I have to believe that this game is won and lost by the players, but I have to believe that Rob had a great deal to do with I don't want to say the culture in the clubhouse. I think that would be the wrong word. I think it's more just sort of the demeanor of the clubhouse, like the tension level. And I'm not suggesting anything negative with regard to Joe, because I like Joe a lot, and I learned a lot from chatting with Joe daily. And but I think Joe was under an extreme amount of pressure, and I don't think it was pressure that Rob Thompson ever needed to feel. And I think that allowed everybody to also play with less pressure. Their schedule got easier. There's no doubt. And they got to winning in June. I think to suggest that they would be here if they hadn't have made the change is, I think that would probably not be the case. I think they needed to make that change in order to get to this point.
Yeah, I think that was perfectly said. Doug, you have a what if?
Well, I'm curious about leading into the moment. What if Josh Hader was pitching for the Padres? That's my one.
Yeah, that's a great one.
It sure is.
And we said it. I'm sure you guys said it on your broadcast, Doug, but we said it on ours. If Josh Hader is warming up now, who's he warming up for if it's not Bryce Harper?
Amen.
Like, it to me, it makes no sense. No sense at all. And there's nobody behind Harper that you're saving Hader for. And, you know, we saw Rob Thompson go all in on Sir Anthony Dominguez two nights before, going for six out saves. He didn't want it to be that way. He wanted Alvarado to get more outs. But that moment, he needed it. And that's what he rolled the dice with. And, you know, from our standpoint, we look at it from our perspective. Bob Melvin knows his team way better than I ever do or would. And he knows what he's doing. But just for me, it's if he's warming up there. I mean, he was warm. He was ready.
Yeah.
You know, they had the delay to you know, put a drying agent down. He was plenty warm, plenty ready to go. But if not for Harper, then for who?
Yeah.
Well, we won't be wondering about that forever, and so will everybody in San Diego.
Yeah.
Here's one that really blows me away. What if they hadn't changed the rules this year? What if there weren't an extra wild card team in the playoffs? What if there were no DH in the National League? Think about that. Yeah. They changed those two rules this year. Tom, how did that work out for the Phillies?
Well, I mean, listen, Harper would be out of his sling at this point. Like, he would be, he'd have rotation in his elbow because he would have had surgery. I mean, almost immediately, you would think, right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have played the outfield. I know one thing, that if they didn't have the extra wild card, I wouldn't have been tied in knots on Saturday at my son's wedding, because I would have been at my son's wedding.
we're definitely going to talk about that.
The extra wild card, it doesn't even cross my mind anymore that they wouldn't have been in if they didn't have the extra wild card. Like, I'm like, it's almost as if it's been there for years. I think the Harper thing, the DH thing, is really, really interesting, because they wouldn't have signed Castellanos probably.
Right.
Because they didn't need.
Yeah, I talked to Dave about that after the game. He said the whole construction of our team would have been different.
Different.
You can't sign both those guys, Castellanos and Schwarber. Wouldn't have happened.
Right, you would have had Matt Vierling playing right field, and that would have been fine. You know what I'm saying?
Somebody would have. But that's exactly right. I keep thinking about it. The stars lined up. Every single star that had to line up. I was talking to one of the Padres guys, and he said, all right, when that Nick Castellanos single on Saturday bounced up the middle, past the pitcher, and then hit the bag and caromed past Jake Cronenworth, we said, something is happening.
Angels in the outfield, man.
I know, right? All right, you touched on this. There's a Tom McCarthy story we have to tell. Tom missed game 4 of the NLCS on Saturday. Why was that again, Tom?
My older son, Patrick, who is also a broadcaster and should know better. No, I'm just saying. He I didn't put it on my plate. I told Scott this last week. I said, I'm not going to worry about it until I have to worry about it. And then we won. And I was like, okay, now I have to worry about it. But
your son, by the way, has the same anniversary as I did. So I did the same thing, I think Jimmy Rollins couldn't come, and Lieberthal.
Well, you know, I have to say, I mean, you know, Scott, I know Scott feels this way too. I mean, we're really fortunate because, I mean, my wife has followed me in this business for 30 years, and I know Scott the same way with Lori. You just when it came out, she said, I said, well, what about the rehearsal dinner? She goes, you are not missing Friday night's game. And I said, are you sure? And she said, you're not missing Friday night's game. And Patrick was like, Daddy, you're not missing Friday night's game also. So I did the rehearsal dinner. I did the rehearsal dinner, did the toast, got in the car at 6:15 in Yardley, Pennsylvania. And I don't know how this was, but I pulled into the garage at Citizens Bank Park at 7:07. And I'm like, I didn't hit any traffic. I mean, Waze, I swear.
It took me an hour and a half to get to the park that day. And I live right near there, as you know.
You know, your Waze app was not as good as my Waze app. Right? So,
no. No, you couldn't do it. Anyway, but so just to get this, clear this up, even your son, who broadcast for the Phillies, yeah, didn't think the Phillies were going to be playing in the NLCS this weekend,
but
right?
To his defense, 2 years ago when they did this, there was no lockout season. There was no wild card to extend the season. There was only the one game playoff for the wild card. So this would have been, I think that, and I don't know if this is trying to go back and look at it, but what he was saying, I believe somebody was saying that it would have been an off day in the World Series on Saturday. So I tend to believe that.
Right, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
I share the same October 22nd. Yeah.
It was so a great day, though.
I did the same thing. I was a minor league announcer when I got married. We got married in October because the season ended September 1st or whatever it was. So for us, it was like, all right, we'll give ourselves 4 or 5 weeks to get ready, and then, we'll do it in early October or whatever. So we spent our anniversary I was leaving St. Louis to go to Atlanta. She was leaving St. Louis to come back to Philly with the kids. So, we've had to spend a few anniversaries dealing with the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, but Meg has made sure she's to tell everybody else there are no weddings from March until October.
so at least you got that straightened out. Good.
With some cushion. We have to have a little 2 week cushion.
Life is about learning from your experiences.
That's exactly right.
So what's it been like in the city itself? Just walking around, and this, can you feel it in the air? I mean, I remember the doorman at the hotel we stayed at. I mean, we talked for like an hour over the 3 days, just talking Phillies, and he was so fired up.
You know,
curious about any experiences in town.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I feel like we've been on the road so much.
Amen.
We had that long stretch on the road right before the playoffs. And we've been on the road so much. We went to St. Louis. We never even came home. We went to St. Louis, then went to Atlanta. It was like we weren't here to experience the city through one whole round of this. So that's been interesting. You know, for me, I don't live in Center City. I live outside the city. But you do notice that everybody is talking about it. I mean, you go get coffee at the Wawa, or you get the email from your kid's teacher, and it's all, hey, kids are wearing red today or whatever. I mean, it's everybody's invested, and I think that's I was waiting actually online to do an interview earlier this morning, and just seeing the shots of the city, and there's something I love about Philadelphia that everybody who's watching a Flyers game at the Wells Fargo Center, they're still paying attention to the Phillies, and they're still celebrating like they're at the Phillies game.
Yeah,
even though they're at a different game in a different venue, it's that the connection citywide that everybody's. Whether you're driving down the street and the bus says go Phillies on it, on the little, instead of where it's going, it says go Phillies, I just love it. I love that about this city.
I thought like when the Phillies clinched the last one, when the Eagles were in Arizona, and like the whole, wherever they were, I mean, there was thousands of Eagles fans, and they were all watching the Phillies game, and they watched the clinching, and they all just erupted at the same time. I mean, It travels.
And then there's the electricity at the yard. It's funny. Last time you were here, we were talking about it, how these fans were handling the torture of watching their team try to get into that tournament at all. Now, every game, it's 2008 again.
Yeah.
What just happened out there at that park the last two weekends, Scott?
Yeah.
I mean, 11 years of waiting, 11 years of pent-up frustration, of you know, disappointment or whatever you want to call it. They've been just dying to do that again. And, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Philly fans very much pride themselves on the idea that they can have an outcome on things. And I can't put it past them that they had an effect on the outcome. Whether it was – I'm not saying they intimidate the other club, but I know they fire up their club.
Yeah.
I know those players love it, and they feed off it. And, you know, obviously you have to – whatever energy you're pulling from, you have to be able to stay in the moment and still worry about your at bat or whatever, you know, whatever it is you're doing, making the pitch you got to make. Yeah, it's been, it really has been unbelievable. You know, Joe Davis told Tom and I, said, this is one of the best atmospheres I've ever been around for any event, any sport, any event. And I think he was, yeah, I mean, I saw him Sunday morning. Just we're getting coffee in the lunchroom at the same time, and he goes, he said, "I'm just loving your fans. I'm just loving this place. It's great."
Yeah, you know, that was another one of my what ifs, Scott. What if the Phillies don't beat the Cardinals and never play a postseason game in Philadelphia this month? If that happens, this season was really barely a blip on Philadelphia's sports radar.
Right.
Instead,
I had to spend all kinds of money to get my kid to a road playoff game because I promised him. I promised him for years, the last 5 years. I'm like, yes, if the Phillies get to the playoffs, you'll get to go. Little did I know they would choose to go in the year that there could potentially not be a home game.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, well, I guess we better get them on the road and get them out to St. Louis.
Let's go see the arch.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, well, that's not all he's gotten to see. There's just such a special connection now between fan base and team that might easily never have happened.
That's a good point.
It's so special. All right, one more thing, because I know you got to go. We probably should mention there's a World Series coming up.
Yeah.
where the Phillies are playing a team that hasn't lost a game yet in the postseason. I don't know that anybody not from Philadelphia is going to pick the Phillies to win, but I don't know. What do you guys think? These teams just played each other last series of the season. It definitely had World Series preview written all over.
Well, if it did, then we're in trouble. But think about that, too. If Nola doesn't pitch that gem on the first game, Phillies wouldn't have been in the postseason because they didn't look good on Tuesday and Wednesday. They hung over on Tuesday, so that was part of it.
Yeah,
it who would have thought that? I mean, they're a really good team. Like, their pitching is – I was so impressed with their pitching in that series. I don't know how you felt, Scott, but I was really impressed with their pitching in that series. And I was really impressed with Alvarez. I mean, that man is a monster.
Yeah, he's a beast. He is a beast. But you know, Harper's a beast right now too. So, I am not going to put it past him. I think that, you know, this first two games in Houston, I think it comes down to the same formula we started this, you know, talking about here today. And that's is if they play like they were designed to play, like they were built, with, you know, two really good starters, it's the same thing. It's going to line up the same way. You're going to get four of the first six games with Wheeler and Nola, and I know they'll take their chances with that. You know, there's an extra off day in there, so maybe you can even ride those relief arms a little bit more if you need to. But this team was designed to hit. This team was designed to hit to overcome the pitching shortcomings. And if they can hit, and again, they may not have to hit a lot because pitching, you know, and they may not hit a lot. But if they get good starting pitching and, you know, you get a couple of big hits along the way, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, Reese Hoskins had four hits in that series. They just all happened to be homers. I mean, they happened to be huge. I mean, three of the four of them were huge. So, who knows? Maybe the formula is there for him.
And the other thing too, Harper's, I mean, he is hitting opposite field home runs, so those Crawford boxes are looking enticing.
That's a good point. You know, I've been talking to all these scouts who've been following the Phillies this month and, you know, just to advance the next series. And the one thing that they have said to me over and over is this team is dangerous because it hits good pitching. Mm-hmm. And that's what it takes this time of year. So, again, I've picked him to lose every round, so you shouldn't even be asking me.
Well, go ahead and pick him to lose.
Pick him again to lose. Yeah, listen, do it.
This is why I don't gamble. This is why I don't gamble. One quick question. I'm curious. All right, Harper clearly MVP of the playoffs, but before that, who was your team MVP going into the postseason? If you would pick a, it's a tough one.
I would probably go JT.
JT
I mean, you can pick across the board. I would go JT.
I'll take a little different tact at that. I mean, I would say JT. If JT doesn't turn his season around the way he did, they're not here.
No doubt.
But for what he did on the field and for what he did in the clubhouse, Kyle Schwarber has been irreplaceable. What he's meant to the chemistry, and you talk to those players, and they might not divulge everything, but you talk to those players and you know that Kyle Schwarber is the touchstone for them all.
Yeah.
He's the one that makes that a team. And I've seen enough baseball in my life, and I'm certainly not an ex-player and haven't lived the life in the clubhouse, but if you tell me clubhouse chemistry doesn't matter, I'd say boo. I think Kyle Schwarber has meant a great deal to the team in what he's been able to do to help bring out the best in everybody.
Plus, he's hit really cool home runs, too.
Oh, by the way, he led the league in homers. but you're right. People really do gravitate to that guy. You just see it. I always tell the story about there was a game in May. You guys might remember this. It was like a disputed trap catch call against the Braves in right field. He was on second. He tagged and went to third. And the umpires, I don't know if they didn't see him or they couldn't tell what it was, but they called triple play, I think, if I remember right. And he just stood there on third base and held up his arms, told the Braves, stay right where you are. Yeah. You're not leaving this field. Told the umpires, you guys are going to overturn this.
He did that yesterday.
But I noticed about that moment was there were seven Braves standing around third base just hanging out with that guy.
I do remember that. Yeah.
In the middle of the game while they were doing a replay review.
Yeah. It
just tells you a little bit about him. Look, I know you guys have to run. Scott, Tom, you are the best. Keep up the amazing work. If the Phillies win the World Series, I think we might need to drag you back to Starkville one more time. It's becoming a tradition like no other.
Love it.
Thanks, my friends.
Thanks.
We'll give him a passport. We'll give him a passport, lifelong passport.
Right. Starkville pre-check. You guys are in.
Sounds good.
Hey, thank you, Blake.
Hey, thank you so much. I'll see you in Houston.
That's all right.
See you guys. Thank you.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yes, it's that time again. Time for listener trivia. Our way of involving you, our favorite listeners, in this show. And Doug, it's October, so we are rolling again. I don't know what's happening. We stink at trivia all season long, and we crush it in the postseason. And does that make any sense? Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, well, we had two teams in the LCS in the National League that were kind of buried for dead, and they just came out of nowhere, it seemed like, the Padres and the Phillies. So I think we're channeling our National League brethren here and stepping up to the plate when it counts in the postseason. And I think that's what great trivia masters do, and I feel good about that, even if we were 0-37 during the regular season.
We weren't quite 0-37, but it wasn't good. Wasn't pretty. I actually think that we have a great shot again this week. So let's welcome in this week's special trivia guest star. Like many, he stumped us before. And, you know, as I was telling him before he came on, we put out the call for trivia every week. And we don't know if we're going to get 4 responses or 40 responses, but we know we are going to get a question from this guy. It's Jamie Pridmore. So, Jamie, welcome back to Starkville.
Thank you very much, Jason. Doug, great to be here.
Hey, Jamie, remind us again where you're from. I think you're from Canada, right? And how many times have you stumped us with trivia before?
Yeah, thanks, Jason. I'm from Calgary, Canada, and this is my third time on the program. I stumped you, I think, 1.5 times because one was a 2-parter, which you got half of it right. So we'll say 1.5.
So we get a question half right, we take full credit. Is that right, Doug?
Okay.
We do. Yeah, it works for Doug. Anyway, well, good luck this week. Why don't you hit us with your question?
Okay, great. Thank you. Who is the only player to play for 3 different teams in the World Series during the 1980s?
To play for or win?
It's win. He won all 3, yes.
Okay, so he won 3 World Series titles with 3 different teams in the 80s. Okay, so it's the 80s, Doug, your time. One player won the World Series, 3 teams. I'll be honest, I'm almost sure that I've got this. I think I covered this guy at one point, but we should work through it. Just think about it, okay? The 80s, the Phillies won. The Cardinals won a couple. The Dodgers won a couple. The Royals won. The Orioles and the Tigers won. The Twins won. And the A's. Now, I am 99.9999999% sure the answer is Lonnie Smith. Phillies, Cardinals, Royals. But I'm definitely open to other suggestions, Doug, if you have any.
He played for the Royals? That's the only one I didn't remember. That's why I'm unsure.
He sneaked in there with the Royals. Then he almost won again with the Braves.
Yeah.
Game 7 didn't go that well for
Lonnie. Lonnie Smith is a great, well, it's a great story because, you know, they called him Skates, and I remember. And then I think like a year ago, I looked up his stats. I'm like, this guy was a great player. I didn't realize how good Lonnie Smith was. And
he had a skill set that he definitely maxed out. Wow. He played a long time.
Yeah, he was really good. I don't know if I have a better answer, I mean, or another answer, really. But
you don't have any answers?
I mean, you know, I was trying to think Phillies because I figured that was... So I was trying to think of like, all right, well, Pete Rose, did he play and something? But, you know, he had
Pete
to go...
Pete Rose didn't win again.
Yeah, he didn't win.
And then you think about those 80s Phillies, there are a lot of guys who were kind of Phillies for life kind of players.
Right.
Bob Boone moved on. He went to
Angels. And then I was thinking that's why it could have been a pitcher or something, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like guys who change teams. But a lot of those guys stayed.
They stayed. They were back in the World Series in 1983. That team almost won 8 years in a row.
Right.
So they kept
that. Right. And I was thinking like a Joe together. Morgan, but then he didn't win in 80. He lost in 83.
No, he was there in 83, and he didn't. He never won again.
Man, that is it. And then
I think we got this.
I mean, I don't have a better answer. I mean, okay. I could have fun coming up with one, but
no need. Look, the good news is this is your kind of question. Only one answer.
Yeah, I know. I don't have to like bang my head against the wall.
Yeah, you know, I know that you never like it when there's three or four or eight. You only need one answer.
Right.
Bad news is we only get one guess.
Right, too. One guess.
Now that we've abandoned the Doug Glanville cheating scam. I'm actually really confident in my guess. I think we should find out. Jamie, is there any chance that the correct answer to your question is Lonnie Smith?
There's 100% chance. Lonnie Smith is the correct answer.
Good one. I'm the wrong guess. I had nothing to do with it.
How about that? Doug, we've got a Bryce Harper thing going, don't we? I think we're now 3-1 in October. Does that seem right?
Well, yeah, we're 3-0 since the playoffs start, so that's what really counts.
So, you know, I got to thinking, man, like it wouldn't surprise me if we put out the call for trivia next week and nobody even answers because, face it, we're hitting all kinds of pitching now.
Just throw it.
Is that a good analogy?
Pretty good, yeah. Cutter, splitter, fork ball, and trivia ball.
That's right. Well, I'm excited.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm excited to get this right.
Yeah, I mean.
You know why else I'm excited? Here comes the best part of the segment, which always means the part we're not in. It's the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster. He is back with another sensational play-by-play clip involving this week's answer. I'm not even sure what it is. So, Tim, what do you got for us this week?
So you guys are 3-for-3 in the playoffs. By my calculation.
So we won the best of five.
Red hot.
All right, we won the DS.
We won three in a row. Didn't we didn't miss one somewhere there? I thought we did.
I think before the playoffs started.
Before the playoffs started, technically.
Okay. Yeah, that was all right. That was just like, we'd already clinched and we already had champagne, so we weren't at our sharpest.
You're resting the starters there down the stretch.
Yeah, that sounds right. Hey, I'm good with 3-0. I am.
So Lonnie Smith is fascinating because his greatest World Series moments were in defeat. Really? In 91, really, he hit three homers in the 91 World Series, and they lost. The Braves lost. And then in 92, he hit a grand slam off Jack Morris in that 92 World Series, and the Braves lost. but he did have a few moments during those championship years. We're going to go back to 1982, in which he sort of had a home run. Here's the call.
Hit to right center, and no one's there. And look at Smith go this time. He's looking for a triple. He's got it. The ball goes in the dugout, and Smith will score. It's 4-0.
Well, Lonnie didn't do it in games 1 and 2, but he is so far tonight. Getting a chance to see the speed of this cargo ball cloud. We've seen McGee in center field go back deep for a ball off Cooper. We see Lonnie Smith the way he can run.
Fun World Series because the Brewers obviously no longer in the American League, but that was game 4 of the 82 World Series.
Okay, so I think we just heard Dick Enberg and Tony Kubek call a Lonnie Smith Little League home run in the World Series. That is great. That is so fun. Hey, Jamie, what an excellent question, even though we nailed it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks for all the fun trivia that you hit us with all year long.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jamie. My pleasure. All the best, guys.
You know that you, too, can be part of this show, just like Jamie. We'll tell you how in just a few minutes.
Strange but true.
Here it comes, the Strange but True segment. At least we didn't have to deliberate much to figure out what this one was going to be, because game 4... of that NLCS on Saturday. Doug, that's what's known as my kind of game. Most nights in the postseason, I write a column called The Weird and Wild. And if that column didn't exist, I would have had to invent it just for that game. It was so nuts. It's one of the wildest postseason games we've ever seen. But we could go on and on and on and on about everything about it. We don't have that kind of time. So I just want to focus on the very craziest thing about that game. The Phillies starting pitcher was Bailey Falter. How'd he do? He got two outs. He gave up four runs. The Padres starting pitcher was Mike Clevinger. How'd his night go? No outs, gave up three runs. Okay, so let me tell you what it's like to be me at times like that. At this game, neither starting pitcher makes it through the first inning. This thing's unfolding. The whole press box is looking at me or coming over to me or texting me or whatever. Okay, Mr. Strange but True, when's the last time that happened? Neither starter making it through the first inning in a postseason game. I'm going to give you the answer. But just so you know, this is not the kind of thing that you look up in like 15 seconds, you know, one click of the mouse. No. I had to go through all the postseason games and all the regular season games where any starting pitcher didn't get through the first inning to find a game where two starting pitchers didn't get through the first inning. And it took me to find the regular season part. Doug, it took me four innings of the game. You just keep going through this. And so I took so much time doing that that meant I was behind on researching the rest of the column. So it's just one thing collides with the next thing. So by the time I got finished writing that night, it was 5 a.m. and I had a day game that day. So that was a good feeling. Good sleep deprivation moment there. But enough about me and my sleep deprivation. Let's rip through the strange but true stuff that went with that game. Okay, we'll start with this. The starting pitchers got two outs combined. That had never happened in any postseason game ever. So then I started looking for times that it even happened in the regular season. Doug, in the last 45 regular seasons, there are only two games like that. The last one was all the way back in 1989. Jack Armstrong for the Reds, Dennis Rasmussen for the Padres. They both got no outs, and they gave up five runs each. But then, the one before that was probably, it's in the argument for the strangest but truest game that ever played. This was the famous 23-22 game at Wrigley in 1979. Dennis Lamb started for the Cubs. He got one out. Randy Lurch was the pitcher for the Phillies. He hit a home run off Dennis Lamb in the top of the first. He got one out in the bottom of the first. So that game just...
Oh, those Phillies pitchers could hit, man. Lurch, Christensen, Carlton, they could flat out hit.
Everybody could hit in that game, pal. So that game roared back to life. Then I was also researching games where neither starter made it through the first inning. Okay, so last time that happened in a postseason game was 1932. Guy Bush versus Johnny Allen. Who knew? Okay, but in the regular season, this is nuts. Going back the last three decades, so since that game in 1989 we were talking about, in the regular season, there was only one game where this happened, and it didn't even take place in North America. It was that crazy Yankees-Red Sox game in London in 2019. Rick Porcello was opposing Masahiro Tanaka. Porcello got one out. Tanaka got two outs. The game turned into 17-13. That's the only game like this in the last three decades. And then it happened in the NLCS in October on Saturday. It was just mind-blowing to research this. Doug, you called that game Saturday. How nuts was it for you?
Yeah, well, you know, it's weird because I think the culture in the last maybe a few years with the opener mentality, it didn't seem so crazy.
That's what I thought.
Because I was like...
There'd be like a Ryan Stanek.
Yeah, I didn't...
No.
So I didn't think it was like... It may have been true, but it didn't seem like unlikely because people would come in and have these openers. I knew Falter was like, he could be out in the first or after the first. I didn't think he was set up to go through the lineup too many times. Like that was clear. And then I've seen Clevenger, and he's just really struggled since September. And I saw him against the Dodgers, and Trey Turner took him deep. And so I was like, okay. So just on that alone, it wasn't as shocking when they both had bad first innings. I was like, okay. But I think just when they got taken out, middle of the inning, both, I was like, okay, that could be noteworthy. But yeah, so the idea of them going one wasn't crazy to me. That's why it didn't like slap me in the face. Because we asked that very specific question of Bob Melvin and Rob Thompson, like, how deep are these guys going to go? You know, and it wasn't like they said nine. Okay, so.
No, no chance of
right,
that.
So it was
nevertheless.
Like, right, it was just.
It's hard for this to happen.
Yeah, so that.
Plus, you're. Yeah. But the other thing is, you were describing a first inning that, if I remember this right, took 48 minutes to play one inning.
Yeah, it was eternity. And I thought maybe they'd, you know, go a little longer, you know, with Clevenger or something, I thought, because I knew the bullpen was such a key to this series. And, you know, even if he's like, all right, he's giving up, but they just didn't see what they liked. They just thought it was really, it was really a problem for them. So, and given the track record against the Dodgers and so on before. But yeah, it was ugly, but it was a long inning. It was exciting. And the Philly, it was like, it set the tone for the Phillies, like, pugilistic kind of approach. Like, they gave up four and then they punched right back and had three. I thought that was a really important response inning for them. And I think that really set them on the train of belief that they could do it, because they came right back. And then Hoskins hit the, after they lost the lead again, Hoskins hits the game tying one. I mean, that was it. That was their game. The quick strike and the ability to hit the ball to the ballpark, that was underscored in that game for sure.
Yeah, the Phillies had a game in the series where they had a 4-run lead and lost. Then they had a game in the series where they were down 4-0 at the top of the first inning and won. First time in the history of any postseason series that happened, where a team won and lost a game up 4, down 4. But that's why we call it the strange but true. Okay, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all postseason long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read any of the fabulous writing in The Athletic, I've got great news for you. If you go to theathletic.com/baseballshow and you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for $1 a month for the next 6 months. $1, that's what I said. Also remember, you too can be part of this podcast, because every week, this is what we do. We pick somebody out there with a really fun trivia question, and then that listener gets to join us right here and prove, once again, there's almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong, unless it's October, in which case we get none of them wrong. So how would that work? I hear there's an email. Yes, you can email us at starkville@theathletic.com. Starkville has an E on the end. Or there's another option, Doug. Twitter is an option. Is it possible to find Doug Glanville on Twitter? Just curious.
Amazingly, my last name has an E at the end of it as well. We share that with Starkville. Hmm. So that's a beautiful
thing. What a coincidence.
But it's at Doug Glanville, DougGlanville. E.
Boy, that's,
that E
that's
is very important at the end. Yes.
E. That, yeah, well, there's a reason that the E is on the end of Starkville and Glanville. That some things
amazing.
Actually
how did
are
that,
connected.
How did that happen?
But you have to spell many letters to tweet at Doug Glanville. Me, you just have to type in at JAYSONST. That's how it works. But please remember to hashtag those questions, #StarkvilleQS. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Tom McCarthy and Scott Fransky for visiting us. Thanks to Jamie Pridmore for the great trivia question. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you next week
on Starkville.
Got it.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.